The Rundown, Part 3, A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Streetlights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
Little Tarrytown, East Side, 17 months ago. 20 minutes after she went in, Jane walked out the back door again, smiling for having let off some steam, and carrying Vernie's box. Despite what Semet said, she hadn't needed to hurt Vernie too bad before he remembered this one account that had enough money to pay back Semet's juice and Semet's vig, and paid Jane off for her time, too. Too bad about the furniture she had to break. It was almost as bad as hurting the big man himself, the way Vernie had wailed. Good sticks of furniture. Even Jane could tell that. Still, she was glad she got to rage out on his stuff, not him. She really liked when she didn't have to hurt people. Well, people who didn't deserve it. Vernie wasn't so bad. A horny, lazy thief, but she'd called worse people friends before. She smirked. After she'd concluded her business, he'd even had the guts to ask her, nicely, if she was still on the clock. Jane declined, of course. That wasn't the kind of working girl she was. But she left him half the salvage in his box, since he asked her so nicely. She just hoped he wouldn't be stupid enough to borrow from Semet again, or someone worse than Semet. Someone who would send someone to collect who wasn't as nice as she was. She heard a voice mutter something, low and nasty. Two more rude voices brayed unpleasant laughter. Jane sidestepped into the shadows beside a dumpster pod, set the box on the ground, and crouched silently, watching. She knew the sounds of hurting, and processed the strike and the hard gasp that followed instinctively. The first someone was unskilled at inflicting pain, but overly enjoyed the act of giving. The sounds that escaped from the form on the ground on the other side of the three thugs let Jane know it was a human on the receiving end. Male, older, and the wet, ragged intakes of breath made it clear he was in real trouble. She itched at the proximity of so much violence, but with too little data to make any decisions, Jane waited. "Not good enough to drink in your place, are we?" asked one, and put boots on the form on the ground. "Fucking joiner," swore the second one, who hawked and spat, and added a kick of his own to their victim's misery. "Joke's on you, Ada," giggled the third as he knelt down, softly, almost romantically. Jane heard the knife slide inside, and the man's, Ada's, wet gurgle of pain. He was down. Defenseless. This wasn't a punishment. This was a murder. She was running before she knew why. Halfway to the three torturers, she remembered the first time she was stabbed, her first week as fresh meat on prison cell block C. She remembered the pain and the terror as she lay where she'd been left to bleed out and die. This, Ada cried out too, and the men just laughed. Jane remembered the laughter of her fellow police officers the day she lost her job and was let out in handcuffs. One of the old bitches who hated Jane's dedication to the regs chapter and verse, and the one of the younger studs whose greedy hands she had rebuffed. They had stared and smiled and laughed, reveling together in their pleasure at her fall. She was all but silent as her feet slapped the molded plaza floor of the alley, channeling all her rage into the attack. She remembered another silence, one that hurt worse than the stabbing and the laughter, a silence that burned like jelly fuel devouring her heart. Nick's silence, and his clenched jaw and his hurt eyes, as he let them take her away in cuffs, not one word of protest. On the last day she'd ever worn a uniform. "I'm your partner, Jay," he'd said when she'd first been assigned to him. "Partners have each other's backs, Always. Unless, apparently, Jane thought, you kept one little secret. Unless you had one little accident. Sure, Nick had her back. She remembered how Nick just stood and stared quiet as a ghost as they'd taken her away. She was almost on top of them now. Rage fully fueled, she stuffed the memories away and lost herself hungrily in the moment. She leapt into the air, a meter and a half behind the three killers, letting the pain of her destroyed career, her ravaged body, and her tattered soul out in an ugly howl. Her first kick separated bones and sinew in the knife-wielder's shoulder and shattered several of his ribs. Jane knew from prior experience he'd be choking on blood flooding his rib-pierced lungs in seconds. Jane's elbow shattered the jaw of the spitter with all the velocity left from her first strike. She landed, rolled, and leapt to her feet, snapping her boot heel at the kicker, and shrieked in dirty satisfaction as he tumbled to the ground, a jumble of organic shrapnel where his knee used to live. "Liars!" she screamed over them, spit-flecking the faces of each fallen man. She pummeled them until her fists sang with pain, and they stopped pleading or crying or gasping. She knelt amidst them as they breathed as wetly as their victim and spasmed in pain as badly as Jane's chest heaved with tears. "Liars!" she gasped again. Then, reluctantly, she left them to suffer alone, because someone needed help more than she needed the big cathartic forget of unleashing hurt. Ada was a joiner, Jane could tell by the silver reflection in his eyes and the pool of silver-flecked blood beneath him, and leaking out his guts through his hands. "Shit, shit, shit," Jane Cry whispered, pushing her hands over his, feeling them instantly drenched in the red. There wasn't an ambulance in the whole damn flying city of Locklaw that would set down in this alley. Ada was dead, and even he probably knew it. "Ada, there's nothing I..." she swallowed. "Can I call someone for you?" The guy was old. His head was bald, the wisps over his ears and eyebrows thick and white. His skin was white too now that half his blood was warming Jane's knees. "No, no one to call." "It's all right," the voice said slowly and lilting. "Duncan was ready, and I knew, one day." Jane fought not to pull back. Joiners were weird, but she'd always protected and served. Just now she did it without a badge, and she did it for herself. Well, and Samat. "Ada, what will help you?" A wrinkled hand with fine blue lines clutched hers. Frozen hells, Jane thought, looking at the hand. How old was this Duncan guy? "It's all right, young lady." Ada's trembling hand lay over hers, patted hers, offered comfort to ease her distress. As he died. Her lip trembled. Frozen hells, Jane thought again, holding the hand tight. I don't know what to do here. What kind of... "I am Hyde," the thing said in his almost sing-song, but slower now, between the clutching breaths of his dying host. "I will miss you, Duncan. We made things better." The words weren't meant for her, so Jane looked away. She tried to ignore them, but they were so heartfelt that Jane began to cry again, and for the first time in a long time, she wasn't crying for herself. She liked the rage better. She wouldn't feel so helpless doling out hurt. Her hand began to tingle. Her eyes widened, and Duncan Ada's eyes widened, focusing on hers. "You're dying. I smell it," his voice hitching again. "So young to die." Jane snuffled and laughed. "No shit." The man dying on the ground opened his mouth to laugh, but only a rasp came out. "There's something we can do. Listen quickly. Would you like me to fix you inside?" Jane remembered what she knew about Hyde's. It wasn't a gift. It was a bond. It was instant family. It meant trust. She couldn't do that again. She couldn't ever trust anyone ever again.
I would like to save you,
Ada Duncan coughed. His lips curled upwards.
I would also like not to die. Do you know what it is to be joined?
She opened her mouth to speak, closed it, opened it again, closed it again, and nodded. The dying man and his house guest peered hard at her.
You don't have a death wish, do you? That would be just my luck.
Jane laughed again, wiped her eyes again, thought hard, shook her head. Ada kept Duncan's body functioning only a few minutes more. In that time, two strangers came to an understanding. Ada told her truths, made her promises, and then told her reasons to walk away, to let two joined beings turn cold on the street. It was the warning that convinced Jane far more than the whispered promises. Her body fought, just as it had for the 3 years since she'd learned she was dying, but Jane was used to fighting back. She won the fight with her fear, and they joined. A little while later, Jane collapsed. She lay there, twitching on the dirty ground, curling into a ball beside the cold, stiff corpse. Her body screamed, "You should have listened!" Knots and cramps and fevers ripped at her, and she screamed hoarsely, then whimpered, and finally cried softly to herself. Something alien moved inside her. She looked at the corpse, the man. Duncan. Ada couldn't share memories, but its essence warmed cold places inside her. Its intuition joined hers. And suddenly, it hurt more, looking at Duncan. Longing, sadness, aching that wasn't hers took root in her bones. Then her eyes drifted closed. Her last thought before her consciousness faded was for Nick, and for the life she'd been promised only to see it stolen away. She cried to herself again, and the world went black. And then, in a fever dream, part sleep, part chrysalis, she cried with Ada. Together, they dreamed of a new life.
You have been listening to The Rundown, a far lost story, written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com.
If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.